Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. For someone who is not himself a combat veteran, Milwaukee writer Nicholas Petrie sure gets it. Last year, his debut novel, The Drifter, came out to great acclaim. The book was a thriller and featured Wisconsin native Peter Ash, veteran of multiple tours of duty with the Marines in Afghanistan and Iraq. And while he made it back to Wisconsin sound in body, his mind was less intact.
When the second book, Burning Bright, opens, we find Peter Ash amidst the redwoods in Northern California, still struggling with the PTSD that afflicts him. But that doesn't prevent him from inhabiting another fast-paced story. The book comes out today, and Petrie will hold the launch party at Boswell Book Company tonight, but first, he joins us in the studio and explains how the character of Peter Ash emerged.
My day-to-day life is as a home inspector in Milwaukee, and in 2008, 2009, 2010, I realized that I had all of these clients who were coming back from overseas. And in the course of my, work day, we were just talking about I'm always interested in my clients and where they've been and what they're doing. And I realized how little I knew about what they'd been through and what they were going through coming home.
And these are veterans coming home from Afghanistan and Iraq.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I did what I always do. I'm kind of a chatty guy. So I just asked people questions. And I don't think they knew I was doing research because I didn't really know I was doing research. I didn't know this was the book that was going to come out of that. But I just got very interested and started reading and looking online and talking to more people. And by the time I got to the end of the first draft of The Drifter, I realized this really was a book about veterans coming home. Everybody in the book has been affected by the war in one way or another.
It's interesting to read it because you're talking about somebody who's dealing with the very severe after effects of being in combat, and you talk about it fizzing, and in this character's case, he can't be inside for very long. It really triggers that PTSD, and it's kind of like his way of trying to negotiate all of that and trying to find his way back to it, and yet it's also this amazing. Both books are amazing thrillers and are plotted so tightly. You know that the aftermath is happening, but at the same time, you're just going, okay, what's happening next?
Well, that's exactly the reaction I'm going for. I mean, the goal is to have you care about the characters and what they're going through, but to keep turning those pages because those are the books that I love to read.
Is this the first? The Drifter was the first one you had written?
The Drifter is the first book that I published. I'd actually written three books before that I couldn't find a home for. And in retrospect, I'm glad because it's such a better book than the three previous books. I'm a big fan of that whole idea of 10,000 hours. You really have to put in the time to get better at what you do. And being a writer is not something necessarily for, someone in their 20s. You certainly can. There are lots of gifted writers in their 20s, but it just took me a long time to get to the place where I was telling a story that really meant something to me, that came out on the page the way I intended it to.
When you look at both of these books, both The Drifter and Burning Bright, do you read them and say, okay, that's what was in my head?
Well, I read something somewhere. I'm a big fan of the interviews from the Paris Review. George Plimpton was the editor, so there's this whole collection of interviews with writers where you get sort of the inner workings of their heads and some of the kind of sniping between writers and the jealousies and the plot frustrations. It's a great sort of way to look inside writers' brains. And for me, it just makes me feel a little bit less alone, that I'm not quite as crazy as I think I am. But in one of these, somebody had talked about how your main character should have the same problem that you have, that you're going through right now. You should give that problem to your main character. And in a way, The Drifter was about kind of the three pieces of The Drifter are the recession and the housing crisis and this veteran piece that we've talked about. And for me, the recession was very personal because I run a small business and which is tied to the real estate industry. And I was following all of the things that were happening. And I also was seeing people put out of their houses. I was a witness to the foreclosure process up close. I'd be inspecting a house a day after somebody was moved out by the sheriff. So all of that was happening. At the same time, I had tried to publish a previous book And all the publishers basically said, you know, we're not going to buy anything for another year because we, who knows what's going to happen. This was right after Lehman Brothers went under and, everybody thought the world was going to collapse. And the publishers basically said, you know, unless we really know who you were, we're not going to take a chance on your book. And so I sort of felt like my world was closing in and somehow my character has claustrophobia, which I didn't connect those dots until much later. But, you know, in a way, that's, I think that's how some writers work. And I don't write an outline. I sort of make it up as I go. I'm a wing it kind of writer.
So not a lot of plot planning and all of that. Does it just kind of tells you where it wants to go next?
Right. Or sometimes it doesn't, but that's part of the process.
Yes.
And Burning Bright, Putnam, which is a wonderful publisher, had agreed to publish The Drifter, and they said, we like this book so much, we'd like you to write another one. And I kind of, okay, sure. Yeah, I can do that. And it had taken me about 4 years to write The Drifter, and they wanted the next book in a year. And so Burning Bright is kind of a road trip book. It's almost a sprint, and that was kind of what it felt like to write this book. I had this opportunity and this freedom to see what else I might do. And what came out is this book that is kind of this wild sort of chase through the West Coast. And it's kind of an exhilarating book, and it was an exhilarating thing to do. It was a lot of fun to write.
Well, it's a lot of fun to read, too.
Oh, thank you.
I said, I page turn, page turn, page turn. Even though the claustrophobia is still there, he's dealing with his issues. And you also bring in a character from the first book, Lewis. I adore him. And he's such a great character. And you introduce a new one. It feels like there's a lot more story to tell for all three of these people.
You know, again, I really had no idea what this book was going to be. The Drifter was intended as what's called a standalone, and then I was going to write something else. And they said, no, we really think this would be a great series, and we'd like to see another book. And all I had to go on was this idea that I wanted Peter Ashe, my main character, to fall in love, and I wanted it to take place on the West Coast. So what were the elements that would be involved? And so that was kind of my, you know, June Cassidy is that other, I think, that other character you're talking about. And she's kind of a very strong, opinionated person who is a great match for Peter. And it was fun to do. It was a lot of fun to do.
It feels like it. You know, it's sometimes as a reader, when I go through books, I can tell when the author's having fun. And then once Lewis came out from Milwaukee to join in on all of this, it just sort of became this huge, wonderful, but also very, very difficult thing. I mean, you're talking about some very secretive, potentially, I mean, this is a fiction, but is it?
Well, it's one of the funny things about writing this book is that part of the research I did early on, I won't say I'm a technology junkie, but I'm really interested in the future. I'm really interested. I grew up reading science fiction. I still feel a little bit of resentment that I don't have my jetpack yet. So I'm interested in all that stuff. And there's the MIT Technology Review is this great online, I'm not quite sure if you call it a magazine or what you'd call it, but it's, you know, it's a glimpse at the technologies that they're working on. And I'm a fairly regular reader of that, and I sort of thought about, so what's something that's just a couple of steps ahead? And between the time when I started writing the book and when I wrote the end notes for the book, a couple of the things that I had thought were, you know, 10 years in the future are actually coming to pass. So it's a crazy process, and that's also, to me, one of the interesting things about writing this book was thinking about technology and how it is kind of agnostic. It doesn't really care how it's used. Medical technology can be used for curing diseases or for creating new ones. Social media can be used for helping democratic revolutions or for, you know, promoting terrorism and demagogues. So it's really a double-edged sword, and I think that's a conversation we're not really having here.
Well, and science fiction, it's fun that you bring that up because science fiction talked about that a lot. I mean, if you go back to Isaac Asimov, he was talking about that in the 40s.
Absolutely.
You know, and you read the stuff in the 40s and 50s, and science fiction was talking about that tension that technology has with a democratic society. And the fact, as you say, it's agnostic. It doesn't care. It just exists.
Well, and I don't know. There's a lot of discussion about artificial intelligence. There's a great piece in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago in the Times Magazine about sort of the growth of artificial intelligence and machine learning and all of these things, which is also something I talk about a bit in the book. And, you know, it's fascinating to think about, but it's a little scary to think about. And so part of this was just I was trying to, you know, bring in some of those things that I had loved when I was a kid, and to think about the things that are current issues. And I'm interested in writing about current issues. And one of the great things about crime fiction is you get to talk about everything. It's poverty and wealth and you know, all sorts of stuff. And the best crime writers are really talking about how we live now.
And Peter, your main character, his hands are not clean. Particularly in Burning Bright, you know, there's a lot of consequences of actions that he's done, which in the course of the narrative, you say, well, of course, because he wouldn't be here if he didn't do those things. But those are things that as a society, we tend to look at and go, that's not so good.
Well, and it's interesting when you talk to combat veterans, they may go to war thinking about their country or trying to protect the place they come from, their town or their state. But in the end, and I've heard this over and over and I've read this over and over, they're fighting for the friend beside them. They're fighting for their buddies. And, you know, people do things in war that, I mean, this is one of the sources of post-traumatic stress. And in a way, your brain's rewiring itself. But there's also this cognitive dissonance between what we're supposed to do, you know, what your job is as a Marine or as an Army infantryman or as an Air Force pilot, and what we've been conditioned to do by society are vastly different. And then you get a couple of days conversation, you know, back in the States, and then you're back on the streets. So we're not having that conversation. And it was important to me to show what some of those real consequences are. I mean, I think this is the social issue of our time. It's going to be with us for a long, long time. And some folks are having an easier time getting back to kind of a normal life than others. But it's not easy. The thing that impressed me the most, I was out talking about the Drifter last year, and people coming up to me were Vietnam vets saying, thank you so much for this. I had two women come up to me at an event saying my husbands, or their husbands were in the audience, and the husbands would never come up to talk to me, but they came up to thank me because it helped them think about how to talk to their husbands about Vietnam. And the Vietnam vets who came up to talk to me said, no, it's been 50 years and it's not going away. You know, we are changing lives in a way that it's going to last forever.
Do you think that maybe part of your job as you specifically, not the writer in general, but you, is that you're giving a voice to these folks?
I hope so. I mean, I didn't start out with that as my intention. The goal was to write something that was, you know, fun, that was fast moving, that, you know, would keep you up way too late because those are the books that I love. I wanted to write a book that I wanted to read. But I felt so strongly about the people I'd been talking to, and it just found its way into the book. And it's really the conversations I've been having, and I get letters and emails, and people find me on Facebook and send me messages. It's so moving to talk to people about this stuff. Again, it wasn't something I did on purpose. It just sort of showed up. But it's, I don't know, there's something about it that is really powerful to people.
I think the way you've written it, it takes us into this one particular person's experience, but then makes it universal as well. You know, we who have not had that experience can walk in that body. We can embody it for a little while and kind of get a sense of what that's like.
Well, and you know, again, back to post-traumatic stress, one of the real challenges is that people don't talk about it. And it's both the problem and in a way the cure, because once you can begin to process that experience with people who've had a similar experience, that is the beginning of the path back. And so I, you know, in a way, this is me sort of trying to add to that conversation or to help start a conversation.
Maybe provide a path.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
And again, these two women who came up to me at an event to say this has helped us to have a conversation with our husbands. As a writer, you know, that's like winning the Nobel. I mean, that's a fantastic, you know, that something that I put on a page can have that effect is fantastic.
So will we see more of Peter?
Absolutely. I'm editing the third book right now. They've asked me for a fourth one, which is sort of rolling around in my head. I'm having a huge amount of fun with it.
Is he going to come back to Milwaukee?
Well, so that's the problem, because part of the DNA of Peter is that he's a drifter. And one of the joys is that I get to explore all these new places, and every setting... I'm very interested in setting, and setting is in a way kind of a character, and to go to someplace new is to get to explore a new character. I had such a great reaction from people in Milwaukee to writing a book that takes place in Milwaukee, because there's not a lot of it out there. So I do have something kind of rolling around that would be a more of a Milwaukee-based, either a standalone book or a series, just because it's so much fun to write about your hometown.
Sure. Well, I look forward to however all of these characters either interact again or have their own books or whatever. But Nick Petrie, it has been such a pleasure talking with you, and best of luck with this one, and come back for the third.
Oh, I'd be happy to. Thank you so much. This was great. I really appreciate it.
Milwaukee novelist Nick Petrie's latest thriller is called Burning Bright. It is a sequel to his first, the best-selling The Drifter. The book comes out today, and he'll talk about it tonight at a launch event at Boswell Book Company.